Hello, and welcome to 10 Very Big Books, a Malazan read-through podcast. This week, we're talking about Gardens of the Moon, Book 4, Assassins. My name is Peter Bond, and I've read each book in the main series. However, my two co-hosts have not. With me today is my friend and closest confidant, India Jones.
Hello.
And the city of cities himself, Joshua Baker.
What's the plan, Darujistan?
There you go. We're back. We're into it. It's been a bit for us in the real world, but we're here recording again.
Yes. I have some opening remarks, Peter.
I would love to hear them.
So I just want to share that I'm back to the audiobook, and I learned that you just have to listen when they're reading to understand what they're saying. That sounds like common sense, but I swear it's not.
It does sound like listening would help with the audiobook.
All that to say, though, I'm back and I'm better than ever. I understand this book completely.
Your brain has expanded.
I'm enlightened. I might as well be a character.
This is a revitalized India. I love it.
You know what? So it could have been that I just really didn't want to be at work today, but I was into it when I was listening. It's like,
okay.
You know, usually.
Let's hope your boss isn't listening.
Oh, I know, right? God forbid. But also, I do what I want.
Sorry, not sorry. Ayo!
And lastly, this audiobook reading was in total 3 hours and like 15 minutes, which is absolutely ridiculous.
I appreciate that. I just want to jump back to the sorry, not sorry thing. It doesn't feel like it got maybe the kudos I was looking for.
Sorry, get
it? Oh, like
it?
That song. Like that
sorry.
Song.
No, it's like sorry. Like sorry the person.
Like Josh, the character.
Sorry's not sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad we got to circle back. Alrighty, moving on. take it away, me summarizing it.
Hit it.
Chapter 11. Kruppa dreams once more. First of the ancient Talon Imaz, bone casters, and the rite of the Imaz. Kruppa encounters a pregnant woman of the native Rivi tribe. After the eruption of sorcery on the Rivi plains, Tattersail's soul has been shifted into the child. The child will be a bone caster and protected by Krull. Krull warns Kruppa before the child is born. A silver fox fades away from the woman's stomach and the child is born. The Bridgeburner's mission is underway in Darujistan. They tear up bricks off the city street and replace them with Maranth explosives. Whiskey Jack is haunted by Sari. Kroka's young hand visits Uncle Mammoth. Kroka hopes to study under his uncle. Mammoth says he could even become a councilman if he worked long enough. They speak about Darujistan being born on a rumor. The rumor of the tomb of a jagged tyrant filled with treasure and power. The tomb was never found, but the city cropped up in the Gadrobi Hills anyway. Sari tracks Kruppa to the Phoenix Inn. She kills the bouncer and sneaks inside. Crocus arrives as well, the coin of Opan falling from him for just a second. Crocus joins Kruppa and his friends to speak about the rumors around Moonspawn. Cole suggests dragons live inside. Elsewhere, Kalam and Quickman work separate from the squad. Whiskey Jack has suggested contacting the local Assassin's Guild, offering them a contact to kill the city council. However, it appears someone has beat them to the punch. Kalam suggests a name he has heard, the Eel. Quickben plans to lure Ascendants to Darujistan and uses the Path of Chaos to slip into the Warren of Shadow, hearing the howling of hounds. After Tattersail was engulfed in flame, Josh, you had a suspicion that maybe she was less dead than it may initially appear. After seeing her fate in Kruppa's dreams, what do you think about that and maybe this dream sequence in entirety?
Well, number one, I was right, so feel pretty good. Feel pretty good about that.
touchdown.
Yeah, number two, Krupa is just the wildest fella, because he's just so the guy in the dream, not Cruel. The guy in the dream is from the
Krupa.
No, the other guy,
but not Krull.
Yeah,
the Talana Mass.
Thank you. So he is from the same race that is now Bone People, but that's from back when they weren't Bone People.
Yes, that's correct.
So in his dreams, he speaks with elder gods, travels great distances, and time travels.
But it's like a dream, you know? Okay. He's dream time traveling.
Right, yeah. Now, question. As we've said several times, we use this incredible PowerPoint to help us with some things. And, you know, some things I read and they just make me go, you know what? Fuck this book.
Okay.
And so one is, it specifically says that when they say Kron Talan Amas in this chapter, it's missing the glottal stop apostrophe, which would denote past tense.
I did notice that too.
What the literal fuck does that mean? Because I know, while reading, I was like, oh, they're missing an apostrophe here. Why is it not here now? Like, what?
From what I understand, and this is some deep stuff, I think it's best if we can kick it over to a new segment I'm trying to start on the podcast that I'm going to be calling the Bone Zone.
Bone Zone.
The Bone Zone. We'll work
on
that.
Our producer is shaking his head at us.
Yeah, I feel so unsafe right now.
All right, And in what are we doing in the Bone Zone, you may ask? And that is right. We are just talking about the Talani Mass. So, Josh, I think the Talon, sans apostrophe, from what I understand, comes before they become skeleton people.
So,
and then the apostrophe would denote after they are skeleton people.
Why the fuck would we know that?
I don't think you necessarily you would,
then
but
why
I'm
the
just,
fuck did he do it?
Well, I don't know
Get
what to
Anderson
tell you
here. Horn. I got a question for him.
India, did you have any Talani Mass thoughts, since this is a new encounter with them after we met Onos Talon last week?
That's a bad question.
Okay, let me...
It's like you didn't even try.
All right, let me try a second one. Let me step up to the bat. Krupa sees the Talani Mass in their ancient form, and kind of learn more about the ancient history of their people. How much of that did you jive with, or was it just kind of passing stuff as you were thinking more about the Krupa dream?
Yeah. So my thoughts were, I felt like the whole first, like, I don't know, 10 minutes could have been an entire chapter. There's just so much information packed into it.
There's a lot of stuff going on in the dream.
So I was having some trouble understanding the difference between the Talon and the Pron? Pra?
Yeah. So see, I actually wrote down a sentence that I found to be terrifically confusing. This is right at the beginning of the dream. I am Pran Chol of Kaneg Tol's clan among the Kron Talon, which is, you know, it's just a tough sentence to, you know, I think that's the character's introduction. And I think there's just a lot of words in there, you know.
So which one is the elder god?
Krull is the elder god.
Krull.
And then there's this Talani Mass Bonecaster, Pran.
Oh, yes. Okay. And then the pregnant woman who's from the present. Or the future,
yes.
Or whatever.
The pregnant woman's from the present with the kind of reincarnated Tattersail
now,
baby.
Now, question.
Shoot.
Is she from the present or the past present? Like, is she from, like, the exact present? Or is she from, like, 20 years ago and actually Tattersail 2.0 is alive in the world already an adult?
But I thought that it's because she went through the Warren and then she got all broken.
She's from the present.
Yeah, present. So there's going to be a baby born. That is Tattersail 2.0.
Yeah. And I think later on, maybe in chapter 13, the Elder God Krull offers an update. And it's like, yeah, the child's with the Rivi and growing.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so Tattersail, she had what do you call those things? A thing, a spell, a curse, a thing on her that made her not die? Would she have died if she didn't have, and that's why she was like all like, put back together after being torn apart.
It kind of had to do with the way she died, because you'll remember that she was kind of engulfed by Talon, which is like the warren of the Talanai Mass. So since she was like kind of killed by that, like this Talanai Mass magic helped soul shift her, from what I understand.
And why did they pick, like, I mean, I guess it's just a dream. So she just kind of popped in and they were like, oh, there's a pregnant woman and they need a body and you're right here.
Yep. The native Rivi people, I guess.
Okay. Yes. That was all my thoughts on that. Krupa's annoying. That's another thing. Krupa. When he's really stern with someone, I think it's Tattersail, and he wants her to come on. He's like, I'm so nice, but I could also be stern. And he like pats himself on the back for that.
Funny as hell.
I was like, you're so annoying. But that was that. Moving on.
All right. Enough Talanai Mass talk, enough Krupa dream talk. This is the, let us move on to the Bridge Burners and say goodbye to the Bone Zone.
See you later, Bone Zone.
I'm not going to say goodbye. Oh. Brow!
That was a little loud.
We're taking the D train to Darujistan.
All right. As Krupa leaves Mammoth's estate, he sees this crew of people working on the roads, but then what's that? It's the Bridge Burners. They're putting the bombs in the street.
Yes.
Whiskey Jack is feeling particularly reminded of his haunted past. What did you think about Whiskey Jack seeing Sari and kind of his reflections on his own violence?
Yeah, okay. So I loved that part.
Me too.
Yeah, which is surprising for me to ever say that because I hate everything about this book. So this chapter was a revelation. But yeah, I really liked it because he doesn't exactly know what the situation is with Sari, but he knows that it's like not good. And he's like, oh, she looks young, but I can tell that she's old and she's done some shit and she's seen some shit that she shouldn't see. She shouldn't have seen to be just like this 17-year-old girl, which I thought she was older than 17.
Nah, she's 17.
And he's like, you know, she's not necessarily bad looking. Like, she's a pretty girl, but she's not just a girl, but I don't know what exactly she's been through. Which I think, and then he's like, you know, I wonder when I see the deadness in her eyes, like, I've done the same things and I don't want to be, you know, a bad guy. I'm a good guy. And
I pulled a quote if I can read
please.
It.
Please.
In the empty eyes of this child, he'd seen the withering of his own soul. The reflection had been unblemished, with no imperfections to challenge the truth of what he saw.
I loved that. I think that this isn't a life that he would have, you know, I think he liked it, but he's really just kind of questioning his humanity at this point. And, you know, I do feel sorry for Sari, and we'll get to that later, but I do, you learn a little bit more about her now, and I'm just like, no wonder she's dead inside, kind of.
Yeah, she's kind of a husk in some way.
Yeah, but also not, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Josh, what did you think about the Bridge Burners now that we're catching up with them on their mission?
Back with the boys. The boys. Again, every single time I'm with the Bridge Burners, I like them more and more. They're just like, as I've said, in any other book, they would be the entire set of protagonists. And they're very, I don't know, they're as much as this part was kind of lingering on like the dark parts, just gotta love them. Also, do love that they're just like, yeah, definitely a road crew. Super chill. Important road stuff.
Like, I guess Darujistan has lax zoning laws.
That was my thought. Like, this place seems like pretty like solid in terms of like how the order of it goes. But they're just like, yeah, fuck it. I guess we're tearing up the road today. No questions.
No one questions it.
I think Darujistan's probably just so big that like,
yeah, I mean, listen, it's 2019. And if I walked out.
What?
It's 2019.
Okay, continue.
No, it's like 2019. If I walked out of my apartment and like my sidewalk was gone and there were a bunch of guys in vests, I'd be like, huh, all right. So I guess it works.
They're not replacing this with explosives.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Josh, after that, we catch up with Crocus, and he's stopping by to see his uncle. He talks about Darujistan and wanting to become more reputable.
Mm.
What did you think about this little sequence?
I really like this sequence because, you know, we've only seen Crocus a little bit back in book 2, I think,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw him then, and I mean, really, he's just presented as, like, a thief. Gets lucky a couple times. We don't really learn a ton about him, it feels like. And this is, and like, you learn that he's got like this weird uncle with like a little demon pet or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
A monkey.
I didn't realize that like Crocus isn't noble or royal. royal, but he is, like, high enough class to, like, it sounds like pretty easily climb the social ladder up to Rujistan. So I found that interesting that he's, like, that's what he's born into, but he's so far been going this thievery path. So, I don't know, it's interesting. I didn't expect that.
In India, what did you think about this little conversation? And any thoughts about the rumor that Darujistan is born on?
That's what I was going to get into. And that was, like, something about the Jagat
tyrant.
There was like this big war and people actually ended up settling, or maybe it wasn't a war, maybe they were just trying, I don't know what they were trying to do, they're trying to find them, I think, and they just ended up settling in Darujistan and made Darujistan because they couldn't find this ancient place. But my thing is, what was even the relevance of bringing that up? I mean, are they going to find it? Is there something important there? Did they say that and I missed it? Who knows?
Well, don't they?
Because I know they're, because aren't they currently looking for it now as well? Or someone is?
Well, hold on. Hold on. I think we're going to get into that next chapter, India. I think more gets expanded on next chapter.
Okay.
Yeah, I know it's mentioned somewhere. Yeah, I just don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's 12 and 13 that we like get, we keep going with that. Yeah. Okay.
But I do think Kroll talks about it. I forget what he says when. Well, anywho's, moving straight along in the chapter. The two final things kind of really happen. We see Sari track Crocus over to the Phoenix Inn and kind of stares at him and is being a kind of creepy little lady. Kills a dude going into the bar. Josh, any hot takes?
Sorry, not sorry, man. I don't know. I mean, it's pretty on brand for her. Also, whoever owns this inn, like, do you think they hate their life or think they're the luckiest person? Is it a both?
I think both. I like how this is, we see Meese and Arilta, the two kind of like barmaids.
Oh yeah, they're fun.
Like when the bouncer dies, I like how they're like, oh, like whatever. This is like, we're cool. and I guess this will lead us into our next chapter. India, at the very end of the chapter, we see Kalam talk about contacting the assassins and Quickban slipping in to the Warren of Shadows. What did you think about this little conversation the two of them have?
At first, I was like, why is he doing this? And I still don't really, like, going into the second chapter, you learn, like, what he's asking for. But I still don't understand. Did he only go there, and I guess this is going to lead us into chapter 12 anyway, but did he only go there to find out the shadow place? Let me re-answer that question, because he went there and he was just like, please don't kill me, so I don't...
Let's just go straight into it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
All right. Chapter 12. Krupa studies in the Chamber of Mammoth, reading about the crippled god. He wonders about Cole's comment about Moonspawn's dragon and how to catch his stalker. Mammon arrives and the two wonder why Crocus would want to start pursuing education. The great raven crone tells Baruch of the mad puppet over the Rivi Plains. Baruch suspects the Malazans to be searching for the rumor of Darujistan, the barrow of a Jagat tyrant. Quickban is escorted in the Warren of Shadows by Blind and the other hounds. He proves himself to Shadow Throne by naming all of the Hounds of Shadow. He is a former acolyte of House Shadow. Shadow Throne reminds him that the price of desertion is death. However, Quickban strikes a deal. He blames Hairlock for the wounding of Gear and promises to provide the puppet's location if Shadow Throne absolves him. The god agrees to the deal, but realizes Quickban's identity just before the wizard escapes. Quickban returns to his body, recounting this to Kalam. Sari appears. Kalam is unsure how they were found. Quickban believes she is possessed by Cotillion, assassin of High House Shadow. Sari tells them to contact the Assassin's Guild. They should go to the Phoenix Inn. And then she leaves. Quickban and Kalam follow her advice and head to the Phoenix Inn. Krupa meets with Baruch, delivering the word of the eel. Baruch questions Krupa about the identity of Darujistan's preeminent puppet master. Much of the city seems to answer to the eel. Resolved in protecting the coin bearer, they agree to send Crocus out of the city. At the D'Arl estate, Crocus plans to return the jewelry to Chalice's chamber. So, Indian, now that we're formally talking about Chapter 12 and Quickban's encounter with Shadow Throne, What did you think about another one of our journeys into the magical Warrens?
I thought it was creepy. I like the dogs. I think that it's just...
I really love the dogs. I really love the, like, Shadow Mansion.
Yeah! I like the dogs. They're like little people. What I didn't understand mainly was why he, like, they set a whole plan, but I didn't get it. And I didn't, and is this just, are we just finding out now that he was an acolyte?
Yeah, that's news.
What is that like a god? Is it like somebody close to a god? Is it?
No, an acolyte's just like a worshiper. Like he just used to be like, he used to be a priest of High House Shadow in a way.
So did he literally just go there to be like, please don't kill me. I have shit to do. But if you don't kill me, I'll give you hair.
Yeah, he was like, kill Hairlock, absolve me of my crime, and then. But why do they want Hairlock?
Because he injured him? He like fought with him?
Quick Ben kind of put all the blame on Hairlock and kind of shifted it away from Opon and like Perrin hitting him with a sword.
Okay.
Yeah. They're starting to feel like Hairlock is working against them.
I feel that way as well.
Yeah.
Crazy puppet. Josh, what did you think about venturing into the Warren of Shadows?
I was sick as shit. I don't know what else you want from me, man. Like, I'm a huge nerd, and when it's just like, oh, a wizard surrounded by death hounds being escorted to the Death God's mansion, they strike a deal. Yeah, like, yep, done. Yeah. You ticked all the boxes.
It was pretty metal.
Super metal.
Alrighty, well, then after they return, they kind of meet Sari, who kind of just shows up randomly. Then she sneaks away, and they head off to the Phoenix Inn. Josh, any thoughts about Sari in this scene?
Well, we kind of knew who she was. Like, I think Shadow Throne, it talks to Cotillion in chapter one, and it is implied. But I'm glad that like a character has finally been like, you know, I like that was good. Now this brings me to a very important point that I have.
Lay it on me.
Sari admits in this chapter to killing assassins, but yeah. She's the god of assassins. So is that like, isn't that kind of fucked up?
Nah, see, this is where you're actually mixed up. She's not the god of assassins. Cotillion is the assassin of High House Shadow.
Oh, okay. Is she...
But doesn't she have multiple people going on in her? Like, she has her, like, young self. She has that person. She has another person.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
But wait.
You're right. So I should say Cotillion is the god.
Cotillion is the assassin.
The assassin of High House Shadow.
Okay, and... Have we learned if Cotillion is an ascendant, is just like is Cotillion a god? Like, what do we know?
Cotillion is an ascendant, and that is about, I mean, like, okay. You know, Opon, you know, it's like...
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Cool. That helps.
Before we go to the Warren of Shadows, we see Kruppa researching and Baruch talking more about the Jagat Tyrant. So, India, this is our second mention of the Jagat Tyrant. Do you have a good idea about what those two words mean put together?
No, I don't.
Josh?
Yeah, oof. Jagat Tyrant? Well, because the one... I think I've had this exact question, and I've asked it on another episode, and I fucking forgot. Isn't one of the bridge burners a Jagat?
No.
What?
One of the bridge burners is a Bargast.
That's okay. So are Jagats giants?
No, they're... And they're one of the four founding races of the world. All right,
the language they use to describe Jagats, I, like, really thought they were, like, a giant race, and I was really confused.
Well, they are slightly taller than humans, okay. But
I mean,
that's not their defining features.
I mean, all I've got is that there probably was a real strong Jagat, maybe? I don't know.
Well, they gotta find them. That's all I know.
Well, in short, the Jagat were one of the four founding races. The Talanai Mass are another one of them. Mm-hmm.
Didn't they fight?
And they did fight. They were in a forever war. And the Jagat...
are still alive, right? Didn't the Talana Mass leave for that long time to go wipe out some Jagat?
Yeah, they're in this forever war. The Talanai Mass have killed a lot of them.
Okay.
And the Jagat generally are loners. They live by themselves because they abhor society, from what I understand.
But near Darujistan.
Well, the Jagat Tyrant's tomb was near Darujistan. One Jagat decided to be a tyrant and rule over people, okay. Which is very un-Jagat-like.
Was Lorne attacked by Jagats, or was she attacked by Bargast?
No, Lorne was I feel so relieved. They did talk about it. Lauren is on her way to look for the tomb of the Jagat Tyrant.
That's what I meant with the two people.
Yeah. Okay. But wasn't she attacked by Jagats?
No, she was attacked. She was attacked by Bargast.
Okay. God, those two. I get them mixed up a lot. I think I'm going to continue doing so.
Yeah. I get everything mixed up.
Lauren is on her way to search for this tomb of this ancient Jagat ruler.
Got it.
Alrighty, thank Christ. Moving on. The chapter ends with us seeing Crocus preparing to climb into Chalice's room. Before we jump into the next chapter, we hear once more about the mysterious eel. Josh, any eel thoughts?
Two called shots. One that's vague and one that's specific. Called shot number one, we've already met the eel. Call shot number two, Kruppa is the eel.
India, any called shots?
No called shots. You know what? The eel is the Jag Hut.
The Jag Hut. Holy shit.
That's what it is. You will see.
All right. I'm glad we had the chance for Josh to call these shots. anyway, upward and inward, Crocus climbs into Chalice's room for chapter 13. Chapter 13. Quickben and Kalam arrive to the Phoenix Inn, spotting the assassin Ralak Nam. Quickben casts two spells on Kalam and track Ralak. Ralak meets his handler Ocelot at the harbor, certain he is being followed. 12 assassins descend from the sky. 2 ambush Kalam and Quick. A fight ensues. Quick escapes and Kalam loses track of Ralak Nam. Ralak and Ocelot hide, but are attacked by the assassins as well. They defeat them and notice the assassins' bodies disappearing. They escape, sorcery flaring in the sky. Sari hears the voices of Cotillion, an Itkokan fisher girl, and the seer Riga. She stalks Crocus across the city, following to the Diarl estate. She kills a guard and watches him break in. Inside the estate, Crocus returns to Chalice's chamber. Chalice wakes and tells him where to return the jewelry. Crocus introduces himself and tells her one day he'll be a proper, formal suitor. Chalice tells him that the guards are coming. He leaves, but not before seeing Sari. On the rooftops, Kalam battles a wizard. He opens a vial from Taishran. The high wizard has imprisoned demons within, and Quickben frees one. The demon attacks the assassins, who are revealed to be Tisty Andy. Ralak thinks of the Assassin's Guild, his ambitions to climb in it and meet its leader, Vorkan. He meets with Crocus and warns him about the ambush from the sky. Murillo joins them, saying they are going to head out of the city on Baruch's order. Ralak plans to stay. Anamanda Rake has dispatched the demon and observes the casualties of the Tisty Andy's ambush. Quickben and Kalam meet up with the Bridgeburners, who have finished planning the munitions. They surmise that the Tisty Andy are the ones killing Darujistan's assassins, and Whiskey Jack considers how else they could eliminate the city council. Sari follows Crocus, seeing his protectors, Cole and Murillo, and watches Kruppa escort them out of the city. She follows. Anamanda Rake returns to speak with High Alchemist Baruch. The Tisty Andy have been killing the assassins to prevent the Malazans from using them. Baruch chafes at not being informed. Anamanda Rake's sword groans with the sounds of chains. Kruppa speaks with the elder god Kroll in his dreams. Kroll says that the child Tattersail grows quickly. Caladan Brood and his Rivi protect her. Through the deck of dragons, Kruppa sees the Knight of High House Darkness. Hearing the sound of chains, the Knight is allied with Baruch and the mages of Darujistan, wielding Dragnipper. Kroll warns him of elder magic brewing within the Gadrobi Hills. Let's do it a little differently. Josh Baker. A lot of things happen in this chapter. Crocus, Tisty, assassin battles. Why don't you pick one thing? Take us there. Take us there, my man.
I would like to talk about the demon and Quickben and Anamanda Rake.
You and the demons, your eyes are always focused on these bad boys.
Well, I mean, as I said, that was the first moment of this book where I was just like, oh, fuck me, I guess. You know, when they just like are randomly like, and then there's a demon. Because like,
it's the same type of demon too.
Yes. So I was very interested to, because they've, you know, they've implied that the Taishrin actually was the one that summoned the demons, not Anamander. And this all but confirms it, which, you know, basically states that like, I mean, then the question is, was Taishrin's original plan to actually succeed at that battle or just to wipe out a lot of high mages and secure power for himself? Big question. We'll find out later, I assume.
Good question.
Okay. Done with that. Well, demon didn't know it would be intelligent. It was a pretty
Pearl. Pearl's having a little combo.
Honestly, I gotta say the ending remark to Quickben was like fucking brutal. Like it tore my heart out. It was like, do you pity me? Like I was like, because there's been hints about that sword, but that was the moment that I was like, oh, I guess there's something real bad about that sword. Very interesting that the demon. God, I'm just telling you, this is one of my favorite scenes of the book so far. When the demon's like, tell me your name, and Quickben says his full name, and he's like, you're supposed to be dead. I was like, first off, sick. Second, how the fuck do you know, demon? Like, is this demon from that area? A lot of questions. Lastly, this sword with chain noises. What's it called again? It's got that sick name with a D. Dragnipur. How dare he just put in such an 80s high fantasy bullshit in here. In this, come on. Oh, yeah, the, like, dark elf stand-in race has led by a king with a magic sword that enslaves souls. How dare you, Stephen Harrison?
But Dragnipur's a great name.
Dragnipur's a sick name. I'm done.
All right, India, what did you think about the battle on the rooftops, Anamander Break descending, the demon, a lot of stuff happens.
All that happened, Peter, but I must say, my favorite part, by far, was when, what's his name? Not Kalam. Some assassin just like decided like, no, you're mine. And it was some woman. And they had a very even match. Do you remember that part?
I know. I think you're talking about when it's from a Tistiani point of view, I think.
I think it's some girl and she's like fighting him, but she's like beating his ass kind of. And I was just like, this is so empowering. But that this
I could kill Kalam if I wanted
yes,
to.
this strong woman is just, he just really I really enjoyed that. But anyway, mostly I didn't really, it was just like a lot of people fighting. I think I didn't really understand anything that was happening. This could be, you know, we're about 2 hours and 45 minutes into the books at this point that I'm reading or listening to. So maybe I just zoned a little bit of it out, but I did hear that, and I really liked that part.
Hmm. Well, let's put a pin in this whole assassin's plotline. India, at later on in the chapter, when Anamander Rake meets up with Baruch again, we kind of learn that the Tistiandi have been the ones killing all of the city's assassins in this preemptive move to prevent the Malazan Empire from using them. So what do you think about this kind of preemptive strike?
Well, I didn't realize that's why they did it, but that kind of doesn't really make much sense just based off of, I guess, the fact that I feel like that's just like saying that you should just kill anyone because you think like Malazan, they either take you and you fight for them or they kill you. So actually, you know, it really wasn't that bad of an idea now that I think about it, because regardless, it would have ended one of two ways and they just chose to fight them now instead of later.
Hmm. I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, the Bridgeburners did plan to reach out to the Assassin's Guild with the exact contract they expected. Josh, what did you think about it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this motherfucker's out here playing 40 chess. Like, what's up?
I mean, Anamander Rake knows what's up. That's for sure.
This fool's been around the block.
At the end of the chapter...
Guys, I have to confess. No. I didn't come up with 4D chess. I read a fuck ton of Game of Thrones articles this week, and one of them used 4D chess like 8 times, and I just really wanted to put it in there. I didn't come up.
Josh, I didn't think you invented the phrase.
I just want to set the record straight.
Okay.
I've never even heard of 4D chess. I just let it go over my head and stay there. But
so you did think Josh had invented the phrase.
I did. But Josh, I appreciate your honesty. It makes me have a lot more trust in you for the future.
So, Indy, in the last chapter, you talked about liking hearing the different aspects inside Sari conflict. So, what did you how did you feel about that? What resonated you there?
I love Sari. I think that Sari is my favorite character.
Yeah.
But only as of recently, because I just understood now the internal battle with, like, the little girl and the assassin and the other person. And it's, like, for a brief second, whoever is in control, which I think is the assassin person.
Yeah, the patron of assassin, yeah.
Yeah.
Cotillion.
They lost control a little bit of sorry. And it makes me wonder if, like, this internal battle is also going to be an important part of the story going forward, like, where she maybe finds herself at some point, or there's some kind of, I don't know. Sorry, yeah. I'm not writing her off.
Yeah, Indy is starting to get invested in this specific character.
I really like Sari. I think she's going to turn good at some point, honestly.
Josh, any Sari thoughts?
Oh, God, I just want to say Sari, not Sari. I don't know. She's like, I mean, I find her really interesting because, like, I don't understand her motivations in the slightest. I cannot I guess she's there to, I don't know, just to ruin the Malazan Empire? Like, I don't know what her large motivations are. I kind of see her short-term ones, but even she's kind of conflicted with it. I don't know. I find her really interesting. Also, cannot wait to see when her entire psyche breaks down as her multiple personalities fight for control.
I so agree. Who's going to win? In that last chapter, like, they said, like, a little kid cried out, and I felt so bad. Like, quietly, though, like, you couldn't really hear it, and it's like, they're coming. They are coming out to play. Her name is Sybil, not Sari. That's a reference from A Girl with Multiple Personalities. It's a movie. It's really good. but, yeah. I'm glad
you footnoted the reference.
Yeah, no problem. Just in case. Check it out.
And then she's stalking Crocus to the D'Arl estate. And he returns and puts the jewelry and kind of has his second encounter with this noble woman. Josh, what do you think about Crocus's shots with seducing young Chalice D'Arl?
Crocus is, he's bold. I'll give him that. It's a bold strategy.
He's putting himself out
he's
there.
He's really putting himself.
He really is.
You can't fault the kid for trying. You can fault him for stealing all of her shit and then trying to put it back in the middle of the night. Which is...
Well, that's okay, though. He put it back.
All right. Here's an alternative plan. He shows up during the day, claims to have found someone trying to fence these goods, purchased them back, seeing the D'Arl estate's brand on them. What's that? He's a hero. I just thought of that right this moment.
But didn't Chalice already see him when he stole it?
No, like, that he plan saw her. She never opened her eyes.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah. So that's my plan. However, I do love his boldness of being like, I'm going to come here suiting you, and you're going to know that I'm a fucking thief, and you're going to love it.
India, what do you think about his shot?
I think that him and Sari are going to end up together.
Yeah. Shipping.
Sari so hard.
I do. And I also think it's worth mentioning, when Sari was, like, following him around, it just, for me, that doesn't really, like, align with what she's been doing, like, following a young man around. I know he's the coin person or whatever.
The coin bearer.
Yeah, oh, yes, I was close. I think that we completely... I'm just so obsessed with her. But I think that we completely skipped over, and I think it's important, so I think it's worth mentioning that, like, one of the people, like, when someone said see her, she got, like, freaked out, and then one of the people inside her is... probably like a seer, I don't know what a seer is, but I don't know. Is that relevant to this whole Crocus thing? And because that's when she kind of had her weird moment and now she's following him all around. So yeah.
I don't know if it's relevant to the Crocus thing, but we do know that we've met only one other seer in this story. And that is Josh, your face.
Is it the Wax Witch from chapter one?
Yes.
Yes, it is the Wax Witch. So,
No, that's not the seer that we're talking about inside. Sorry.
I don't know. It could be that she thinks of the seer because it was like the last thing that she saw that day.
But didn't the seer say too, like, I'm going to be in you and I'm going to be telling you what to, didn't she say something along those lines when she was talking to her, just walking with her like little. Water?
Yeah. She had this prophecy. She was like, our souls will be intertwined. Oh. I'm not going to leave you anytime soon. She said something like that. Hmm.
You see. I knew Sari is actually the protagonist of this story. Case closed.
I'll put it out here. If Sari is the protagonist of this story, I'll eat a flip-flop.
I'll take Alrighty. You up on that.
After Sari sees Crocus, she follows him and sees kind of him meeting up with his posse, so to speak, to head out into the Gadrobi Hills. And we also hear Kruppa being warned that elder magic is brewing in the Gadrobi Hills. Any thoughts about what could be out there?
Jag Hutt.
Jag Hutt.
Jag Hutt.
Jag Hutt. Jag Hutt. I think we're going to stumble across a Jagged Tyrant.
Me too.
And by that I mean the tomb of a Jagged Tyrant. Or more likely, all of these forces are going to meet and it's going to be a shit show.
You know, I think that's an interesting guess you got.
Good old Peter doesn't show lies on his face, Bond.
Good old Poker Face Pete.
That's what they call you, and for good reason. I have no idea what you're thinking.
We talked a lot this week. We had a lot on our mind, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's also 7:30.
Yeah, it's not as late as we usually record.
I'm so proud.
Wait, is this 7th? Oh my god, we did it.
I also think it has a lot to do with, like, a lot happened in these three chapters.
It was insane.
I remember reading chapter 3 specifically, chapter 11. I remember reading it specifically thinking, be like, fuck, this is going to be annoying to talk about. There are so many things happening. They're all over the place.
That was me in the beginning, like, chapter 11, like I said, in the first 10 minutes, I was like, okay, well, we could talk about this for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that, Peter, I want to kudos to you for doing, like, a really good job leading these discussions, because you could go on forever.
I'm glad to get kudos on
welcome
air.
Welcome to our new segment, the Kudos Corner.
Kudos Corner. And Josh, kudos to you for always knowing what to say.
Oh, shucks.
Okay, now for me, both of you.
Okay, kudos. Kudos to India for coming up with the best segment on the show.
Wow, the Bone Zone's taking a hit on its first episode already for me in rank number 2. I just really liked, you know, I think I loved reading these three chapters. They're a blast. The most fun I've had this far rereading the book. And I think it has a lot to do with, like, you know, it's like all the characters are in the same room. I mean, not all of them literally, but it's like all the plot lines. It's like the starting of them being woven together. You know, we're all in the city. We're all dealing with the same problems.
We're
all
in Drew to stay together. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, just like that. So it was just, you know, it's exciting to have everyone in there. So I really got a kick out of these three chapters.
I also think it's becoming easier to read. Like, well, I shouldn't say easier to read, but because it's
you
not.
Heard it here first. It's easy for India to read the book.
No. It's the worst book I've ever read in my life. However.
However.
Now that all the characters are defined, even though sometimes I still confuse them, it's easier to understand who they are as and why, what they're saying and why they're saying it and how they speak. I think it's becoming more
I'll say this, India. Speaking of which, I'm looking in the Dramatis Personae. Not a ton of names left that we haven't gotten to.
Yeah, you've certainly met every major character. There's this thing, though, that it is a pet peeve of mine that Erickson does. We're like, they'll meet, you know, like, Dubo on the street, and I'll be like, oh, hey, Dubo, and then they'll move on. And Dubo will be in, like, two sentences, and he'll get to be in the Dramatis Personae. Yeah. So then you look at it, and you're like, man, there's 600 characters, and it's like, no, there's a lot of very minor characters sometimes mentioned.
I also, since we're talking about things that we hate,
No, please, go ahead,
I hate that people have multiple names. That steams me. That is the worst.
That steams you.
Who has multiple names?
Well, they have they'll have like a first name type thing, and then they'll be like, oh, he's the something. Like the coin bearer.
But his name is also. Yeah.
So like somebody will refer to him.
There's a lot of titles.
Lorne and
use.
The adjunct.
Yeah, exactly.
Dujek
exactly.
The high fist. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they'll call them by like one name or the other, but I'm not, how am I supposed to remember? Like you just said Lorne and the adjunct, and I didn't even remember that she was the adjunct. But now I'm like, oh yeah, she was pretty badass, that adjunct.
Yeah.
She's a strong, independent woman.
That's right. She don't need no man.
Mm.
Before I ask for any predictions, because we're about halfway through the book now, I did want to read my favorite Kruppa quote from this week. And it is when he is reading about the crippled god, he feels like the passage is too verbose and stands up and says, brevity, Kruppa prays for brevity, which I think is a deeply ironic line. So
I don't get it.
Kruppa is not a brief man, in my opinion.
Oh, no. All of his parts feel like they go on for days, especially his dreams.
Especially his dreams.
His dreams take up like a whole half of the first book. Not really, but you know what I'm saying.
Alrighty, let's wrap this bad boy up.
Let's wrap it.
As always, we're 10 Very Big Books on Twitter and at Gmail. If you like our podcast, let someone know, subscribe, tell a friend about it. Let us know what you think about the show or the book. We'd love to hear. And before we go, as always, We've had a few called shots this week, but India, do you want to hazard a prediction for what's going to happen in the Garobi Hills?
In the Garobi Hills, we are going to find the ongoing battle between the Tahkam Iman and the Jat Huts. and we are going to actually have a victory.
Josh?
I seriously hope that the trio from Darujistan links up with Lorne and Tool, but they don't know they're enemies, and there's like a sweet chapter of them chilling, and then like the end of this book is them realizing. I'd be pretty hyped.
That's a really good one.
I've read a lot of fantasy.
Well, I guess we'll have to see what happens.
I'm feeling mine's going to be the one, though, guys.
As always, thanks for listening. See you soon.
See you soon.
Bye.
See you soon, Gardens of the Moon.
Hey, everybody. Producer AJ here. Continued thanks, as always, to everybody who's listening and sharing and discussing the podcast on Reddit and Twitter. We got our first email this week, and we'd love to get some more 10verybigbooks@gmail.com, and you can also tweet us at 10verybigbooks. We also, of course, want to thank Dan Geserich for making our wonderful logo. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Geserich for the hottest Pedialyte takes. And of course, all the music for the show comes from Amaranthine's album Simulant Rain, which you can find on Bandcamp. Links to their pages will be in the show notes, and 10 Very Big Books will be back in 2 weeks on July 5th as our heroes make their way to the Gadrobi Hills. Thanks so much for listening.